Welcome back to Rotten Rewind. We're back.
Yeah. Who are you? What's your name?
I'm Courtney Peronto.
Courtney.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm Max Rue, and we're back. We're back with you. We missed you.
New miniseries or new series?
Yeah, new season. Well, this is a little intro to the new season. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, before we kicked off a new miniseries, we wanted to talk about, I think, a movie that's caused a bit of a discourse. It's definitely started a lot of conversations in the last month since its release. A little movie called Babylon, directed by Damien Chazelle, directed by the youngest Oscar-winning Best Director winner ever, Damien Chazelle. You know, nominated for Whiplash and then wins right after for La La Land, gets snubbed for First Man, and then signs a first look deal with Paramount, and this is his first movie to come out of a first look deal. A very expensive $80 million, 3-hour epic.
And 8 minutes.
3 hours and 8 minutes. You're right.
That's a long movie.
It's funny because I think when we talked about the movies that like were coming out last year, because so many of them that were supposed to be like prestige
were kind
movies
of were crashing.
Bombing. Yeah, like crashing and burning. I don't think we ever considered Babylon.
I think that we both thought, or at least I thought, it would be like good and not... I don't think we thought that it would bomb.
I figured it definitely wouldn't make its money back. Not in this climate. Not in this economy.
The preview looked slick.
The first preview was incredibly annoying.
Okay. I don't think I saw that one. I saw the second one.
The preview that had Brad Pitt dancing and then falling was one of the most obnoxious trailers. If you, like me, are an AMC Stubbs member and you went to the movies at all between the months of September and December, you probably saw the trailer for Babylon a million times, and you probably grew to hate it the way that I did. Okay. Because the trailer does culminate with Brad Pitt dancing and then falling off a balcony, a scene that is thankfully not in the movie. He does fall off the balcony, but he doesn't dance before.
Never mind, I do remember this preview.
Yes, he doesn't dance. Thank fucking God somebody realized that should not be in this movie. It's funny, for a movie that bombed as hard as it did, and then there were people saying it wasn't marketed right, it didn't, you know, get enough publicity. I'm like, I feel like every time I went to the movies, I saw this fucking trailer.
Yeah, I think it got a lot of publicity. Unless you're making the last of an Avengers movie or something like that, I think that it's a hard ask to see a movie with this plot that lasts this long.
Yeah, smart to release it over Christmas just to try to squeeze as much money out of it as you can possibly get, which still was nothing. I think the movie at this point has made, it hasn't even made $30 million worldwide.
How much has Megan made? Sorry, Mithrigan.
Mithrigan?
How much has Mithrigan made?
Mithrigan has made a good amount of money. Mithrigan has made, it's made $126 million worldwide.
Sick.
And it costs like nothing. But the thing is like, even though, as I'm sure we will talk about throughout this episode, I do not like Babylon.
No.
I was never rooting for its failure. I can say that much.
No.
Even though I don't like it, I wanted the movie to succeed because, yeah, it's a huge swing at a time when we're not really getting any huge swings like this from a director who had the cachet to get a blank check from a major studio at this time to take a shot. And look, I think that he fails massively, but there are a lot of people that don't think that he failed massively. It has its defenders. It's been very polarizing. I've seen critics that I usually either agree with, and at the very least respect their opinion, who really love this movie, who really go to bat for it. Mm. I've seen others that really fucking hate it. We were going to have a guest for this episode, but we decided, you know, it's our first one back in a little bit. And I think that given your background, your Courtney background.
Yeah, me.
And what you went to school for. And
yeah, I like the old timey shit. Yeah, yeah, I like old, like that's like what sent me to school, and it's largely what I like chose to study. This movie definitely references one of my favorite movies of all time.
Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, which I already felt like he referenced enough in a previous movie.
It's funny. You either get both or one. You either are like, oh, this is Singing in the Rain, or you go, oh, this is Boogie Nights, or you go, oh, this is just Singing in the Rain by way of Boogie Nights. Like, it's hitting the same exact plot beats.
Yeah.
In a way that's interestingly, to me, like, my first thought was like, oh, it's like you really took the core of Boogie Nights, like the actual arc of the story, mm-hmm. but you forgot to, like, cover up your homework.
You just went through Cliff Notes and then forgot to change the wording.
Well, this is
it's also relentlessly long, and it's like disgusting by ways of a Jackass movie. That's not an exaggeration. Like, you when you said that, I thought you were exaggerating, and it is really, really gross. Really, really quick.
I think what we have here in Hollywood is high art. It's
party time, Sparkle Time.
If you could go anywhere in the whole world, where would you go?
I always wanted to be part of something bigger.
Yes.
Let's go! Something that lasts, that means something.
You know, when I first moved to LA,
I got your face tattooed, Linda.
You know what the signs on all the doors read? No actors or dogs allowed. I changed that.
Good morning.
Good job for you.
I'll do anything.
That's the cocksucker they sent to screw us.
We are going to be more than they ever bargained for.
What I do means something.
It's bigger than you.
And I'm going to bed.
Let's jump into Babylon. Let's into this fucking 3 hour and 9 minute movie. It's 189 minutes. A movie that you watched recently. Yeah.
And like, listen, I live in Portland, Oregon. Not a movie city. You live in Los Angeles. No one I know has seen Babylon. And so here's what I will say. It's not a movie that I disliked watching so much that like I have nothing to say about it. Like, I'm like, has anyone seen Babylon? Can I talk to Babylon with anybody? And the answer is like, no, pass.
No, no one's seen it.
No, no one's seen it. Yeah.
Obviously, I'm more online in like Letterboxd world than you are, but yeah, I definitely obviously know a lot of people through that world that have seen it. In real life though, like, I don't know many people who have seen Babylon. I can't really talk about it with people at work because none of them have seen it. None of them really to see it, because it's 3 hours, in a movie like this, unfortunately, is going to live or die by its reviews. If people were like, it's amazing, you have to see it, it's nominated for a million Oscars, you should definitely check it out, they'd be like, okay, I guess I'll go see the 3 hour movie with but
I think that I was more excited to see it after you said how disgusting it was. And then after I saw it just like eating shit everywhere, like that was like when I was like, okay, it seems like we get to do this one for the podcast. I'm pretty excited to do it now.
Yeah.
The plot is really straightforward. I mean, also we'll talk about her in a second. Barbie better be good, Miss Margot. She had a really bad year. Don't you think it's kind of just supposed to be sort of like a couch love story between the Nelly LaRoy character, Margot Robbie's character, and Manny Torres, who is an actor that I don't recognize, Diego Calva.
His name is Diego Calva.
To me, was he in Game of Thrones or something I didn't watch? Like, no, is he famous?
Diego Calva is a mostly unknown actor. He was, I guess, on the show Narcos. I had never seen him until this movie. This was like a huge breakthrough part for him. He was cast in the part and I guess was told by Damien Chazelle, like, you're going to become so famous after this movie that you won't be able to walk down the street. Something that I don't think is going to happen for him, unfortunately.
Not off of this movie, at least. So it's basically about like these two aspiring show business people in the pre-talkie era of Hollywood, like when Hollywood is like first coming up, and they're like rise and fall from the studio system. It's really straightforward, and then you get some auxiliary characters, probably most notably the Brad Pitt character. He's somebody named Jack Conrad. You get sort of like a gossip hound played by Gene Smart.
It mostly tracks the trajectory of Manny. Manny is kind of your way into the world. He is the Dirk Diggler. He is the outsider who works his way into the world.
Have you ever read the book? I'm guessing maybe you haven't. Like, What Makes Sammy Run?
No, what is it?
It's a Bud Schulberg, but it like literally just tracks this kid's trajectory from like the mailroom of a studio system to like a big Hollywood producer. And like, I think that that's like, it's a pretty well-known book. Like, I think that you're supposed to
fiction
sort
or
of,
nonfiction?
It's fiction. It's fiction. Okay. It's really good. You should read it, especially if you live in Hollywood. Like, it's fun.
Listen, I'm from Hollywood.
It's great. I think that you're supposed to sort of see that if you've read the book. I'm not sure. But this character is a lot more likable.
In the book, though, is the character white?
Yes, of course.
Because here's my thing. I understand that we're casting roles a lot differently now than we would have, you know, even 10 years ago. And I'm also not as familiar with old Hollywood as you. I've never heard of a Mexican head of a studio. I don't know if that would have even been possible at that time, considering the racism of the era that were even shown in the movie itself. I'm not saying like, oh, I'm upset that this character is Mexican, obviously. I'm
I mean, more because just also like, his race is like called upon.
It's
few
very
times.
Prominent
like,
in the movie. Yeah, it is.
So
he is,
that doesn't bother me that much.
I
he
don't
could be
know.
Italian passing. Like people are also stupid when it comes to race.
No, they you are. But, like, but it's very, I think if it, that's the thing is that like, if it were to balance a line of like, oh, he's Mexican, but he's trying to pass as something else or something like that, like that could be different. But like at that time, I was just like, I have a hard time believing that this guy is working his way up to the point where he becomes right. the head of a fucking studio.
I don't know. That doesn't bother me as much as everything else in the movie.
Like, no, look, it's the least like, to of me, the movie's like, problems, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, because to me, it's like, yeah, sure, fine. That like is a little weird. I feel like they kind of introduce that early with like one of the movie's only... One of the only times I laughed at the movie is when someone's like, don't talk to her, just pretend you don't speak English. Like, I was like, that's funny. Like, I do that sometimes. That was fine for me.
Well, it's weird because he's the most fleshed out character, but I feel like I know anything about him.
I don't know anything about him. And he's also, he kind of has like the Ingrid Goes West problem where I'm like, why are you keeping doing things for a girl? Stop doing things.
He's horny to a fault. He is our way into the story. The catalyst for him is definitely Nellie LeRoy, played by Margot Robbie.
Robbie's kind of supposed to be like a Clara Bow.
Yeah, exactly.
Figure.
Even a though little... she's kind of fashion to look like maybe like an 80s starlet at times, which is interesting.
I don't understand that. Thank
I don't
you.
Understand her hair.
I don't understand her hair.
I don't understand her hair at all.
No. Yeah, she's like pretty like coke addled here, pretty drunk.
There's a lot of drugs in the
she's
beginning.
She's not having the best year. I don't dislike.
I think she's giving her all.
I think that she's giving.
She always does. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that she's giving the best performance that she can. But I think that the part is a little like.
It's a thin
role. As much as she's in it and as much as she's asked to do like some embarrassing like balls to the wall things, like it's still kind of thin.
It's super thin.
And I mean, like, it's fine that you don't like anybody in the movie. You don't feel connected to them. But I think the movie really wants you to. I think it wouldn't end the way that it does.
No, you're right. I think that's a huge problem, though, because it's like a big thing that I thought about afterwards, like, especially with its connection to Boogie Nights was like, okay, the talent that PTA has amongst many talents is that he really knows how to endear you to characters that are flawed, but in the most human way. Mm-hmm. And you can't really ape from PTA and not bring the humanity with you. That's one of the biggest things about PTA is the humanity and the love that he has for his characters. You watch Boogie Nights and they're flawed people who make mistakes, who hurt each other, but ultimately are human in a way that we can all relate to and we can identify with. And it helps endear us to them. And that's not present here at all. It's just like, you don't have, I don't know if Chazelle is just too much of a technician to really.
That's what I think it is. Yeah. I think he's like, also if you listen to interviews, well, I know that you have more than me, like Paul Thomas Anderson interviews, like I think that he also has like kind of like cheeseball love for Hollywood cinema that like does, isn't as like present. Like it's not like the top note. And I think that Chazelle here is just like, feels so personally indebted to tell this story and like to nod to these other things. That like I don't feel like any of these people are characters. I mean, first and foremost, love him. Brad Pitt does not work for me here. That entire character. Because like that character is obviously fashioned off of like a Marcello Mastroianni 8.5 character. Like that is a Fellini
character. I guess he was written to be like a John Gilbert.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I'm sorry. I think he's miscast.
I think he is miscast. But I do think he actually has some of the better moments as an
actor. Oh, no. I think that he's doing a good job in the movie. I think that the movie does a bad job at showcasing him and does a bad job at writing him. And I do feel like he's miscast. I'm sorry, Clooney could have done it better.
It's funny. I saw somebody even mention the fact that Leo even could have been a more interesting person. Because Leo has more of the face for that kind of actor. And that Brad Pitt is a little too... like he brings this kind of rugged Midwest quality that it just doesn't really work for the character. That character's entire trajectory, it's just like you can see the arc on the page. Like you can see exactly where this character
where it's
is gonna going.
Go. And that last scene with him, I was just so like, bad. It's so bad. That's the movie's worst scene, and it has plenty of bad scenes.
Because I was just like,
but
why?
That was the only
You've given
one
me
that-
nothing. To believe that he would do that. I know. You think as a writer that you have created this
his scene
for
before
him.
That when he says like I'm gonna go get some cigarettes or something, like I think that he's good.
He is very good in that scene. He is selling that, but on the page, I'm just like, no, you've given me nothing to suggest.
Stupid.
This. Yeah. I mean, so those are kind of like your main three characters. The other ones that pop up here and there are Jovan Adepo as Sidney Palmer, who's like a jazz player.
Oh, yeah.
Who is also very good, considering how fucking poorly written his character is. The banter in the jazz band is cringy.
Mm-hmm. But he's good.
He is good, as is who I think actually might be the best performance in the movie, Lee Jun Lee as Lady Fei is great.
Oh, yeah.
But there's an interesting character there.
I was going to say, again, it's not even like, sometimes I would diagnose it as like, well, it's a microaggression. Like it's cast her as the Asian part and it decided that that's going to be your personality. Except he does it to everybody.
But she also has like, she's also queer. She's also like, it feels like a very modern vision of how we would tell this story. Not to say that there wasn't different races working in Hollywood and there weren't queer people. Obviously there were, but it's just like the way that he checks off boxes, it feels like, for different characters. He's like, well, here I can have a queer character who's also Chinese American, have her feel like an outsider as well. Like, I think that actress is really good. I've never seen her in anything.
She also great. Looks maybe she has the best like costume design too. Margot Robbie always is just wearing the same outfit basically. Yes. That reveals like her middle, like the space between her tits, and she looks great. She looks wonderful.
She does, yeah.
But I was like a little bored of that cut of dress for a while. I was like, dude, this is boring.
So it's basically like you have this 30-minute long intro.
Can you please describe the beginning?
He basically is trying to bring you into a party that feels like a good time. And he introduces you first to Manny, who is bringing an elephant to a big actor's house mansion in Bel Air for a party. It begins with the elephant basically shitting all over them. The elephant cannot be tamed because it's an elephant. And right away, credit to Damien Chazelle, I guess he is kind of telling you what movie you're about to watch.
Yeah.
It's not a movie that I want to watch, but not even because of the gross out stuff. It's just that it feels, and I think this is the constant thing throughout the movie, is that like, it doesn't feel like somebody who has genuine affection for gross out humor even, or that actually has any edginess to them at all. So it's a hard sell for 3 hours. It feels like a virgin making boogie nights where I was just like, I don't think you fucked. It literally reminded me of like a teenager who just touched a titty for the first time. And he was like, oh my God, like this is crazy.
As gross as like the elephant poop is, then it immediately jumps to like the Fatty Arbuckle.
Getting pissed on. Yeah.
Getting pissed on.
And then the girl just like, ODs, just like the scene in Boogie Nights with the OD at the party. And it's supposed to just be like hedonism for the sake of hedonism. It's just like, everyone is just like coked out and fucking at this party. Yet it still feels so sexless.
It does. It's not hot.
No, there's nothing hot about it.
It's not right. It's not cool. It's just not sexy. I mean, it's not sexy like it should be.
Also, if you're going to carry a body out behind like an elephant, like, can I watch that part happen?
Yeah, that too. Just,
that's a I'm funny also like, idea.
Do you like really think these people even care? Or
I was like, these people are having like a six way and they're on drugs. Like, I think that they would just think that you're carrying like a passed out person.
I don't think anyone would notice. Flea plays like the studio fixer, which
he's
is
pretty
like,
good.
He's fine. It's fun casting, I guess.
Yeah,
I enjoyed his casting more than Spike Jonze's.
Yeah,
I wasn't crazy about Spike Jonze's casting. But yeah, you basically get a 30-minute intro that's supposed to just be like this fucking epic party where everybody's doing fucking drugs and fucking, and then it cuts to the title and it's supposed to, you know.
And by the time of that, you're just like, oh, give me a fucking break.
Yeah, exactly. I just was like kind of rolling my eyes at that
baby
point.
Lawn.
I went into the movie, I think, with not even like that low of expectations or anything like that. I just was like, let's see what this is. I'm kind of interested to see if this is going to be like a fascinating, fun mess. And I think immediately I was just like, oh, I think this is going to be really annoying.
You know, in some ways, it's less annoying than I thought it was going to be and just more boring. Because here's what I will say. I like this movie better than another movie. Okay, also, can people just go and watch Singing in the Rain? Like, I don't understand. Like, because, like, I think this movie is better than The Artist, which is, like, it like, as much as this movie rips off other movies, The Artist did it so poorly and won. Well, so, like,
yeah.
The Artist is terrible.
I would take this over The Artist. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I at least think this movie's doing something. So there's that. So yeah, like where like The Artist, I thought that all of like the old Hollywood stuff was cloying and annoying. It's like, but that's a problem with these kinds of movies. It's like, you know, the Fatty Arbuckle thing, like a lot of like the little in jokes or whatever in references, they please no one because anyone like me that like is a nerd for that shit and like read Hollywood Babylon, like loves old Hollywood, they feel flat. Right. And for people who don't know it, it seems almost like too crazy and unbelievable and like just out of left field. I mean, the only movie that I think it was able to really seamlessly pull it off as Hail Caesar. And it doesn't take itself very seriously. It is also just, it's just a comedy and it's like a little bit more loving. This one, like, I do think that like if the genesis of the idea was like, I want to make a Hollywood movie that's a send up of old Hollywood that shows how actually like filthy old Hollywood used to be, I kind of like that idea.
Yeah, I think on paper, it's a fun idea. I just think that it's not the right messenger. I don't think that Damien Chazelle I don't think that he has the edge, and I don't think he has the affection or the humanity that he would need to make the story work.
I just think he's not a good writer. Like, I just think that he just should let someone else write. Like, I liked La La Land more than I thought I would.
I mean, La La Land, but I think La La Land also rests on the charm of its leads and their chemistry, which is like kind of undeniable. And Whiplash is a movie that I think works really well the first time when you see it in a theater. Mm-hmm. The overall message to Whiplash, I don't think is good, or at least the message that I think he's sending with that movie, but undeniably has like a really bombastic ending that sticks with you and it leaves you kind of buzzing when you leave the theater. And so he does know how to kind of, and we'll get to the ending of this movie, but I think for the most part, he knows how to land an ending and he knows how to send you out on a high. Did you see First Man?
No, I was going to say, I haven't seen First Man, which I know is your favorite of his.
I think that's his best movie. The first time I saw it, I was kind of turned off from it for some reason. I don't know why. It just didn't work for me. And I watched it a second time and I was like, oh, this is actually incredible. And I have no idea how it works so much better.
No, I want to see that. Maybe I'll see that soon.
I think that's a good mode for him. It's really quiet and meditative. He has a good leading man in Gosling who can convey a lot without saying much. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this one, they have fucking poor goddamn Margot Robbie doing like almost like Lucille Ball on crack at times. I'm sorry. That scene at the party where like her whole motivation in that scene is that she just really wants to tell like a fart joke. I was just like, how? Like, listen, I can be that girl. You know what? I want a drink. Like, she's like a little kid. Her characterization in this and Amsterdam are just like pretty pitiful. I, Tonya, like her performance in I, Tonya is like one of my favorite leading women performances.
She's an incredible actress.
She's great. She's so pretty. Here's what I will say. That's my least favorite scene. My favorite scene, and one that she really delivers, and the part of the movie that I did like is when you're on that set and there's a female director. Yeah. And she's like,
which scene are you talking about?
The scene that she's first getting directed on her first picture.
Okay. The scene that the director, who's played by Olivia Hamilton, who is Damien Chazelle's wife, who also used to apparently work for McKinsey with Pete Buttigieg. Very weird.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's a snitch. No, so she was a consultant for McKinsey and now she's an actress and producer.
I liked that scene a lot.
I didn't mind that. I think it was just that like that whole sequence that cuts in between that and then the kind of like war epic with Brad Pitt and Spike Jonze directing was just, it was so obnoxious.
That was really jarring. That was obnoxious.
The intercutting was so obnoxious and I just was like over Spike Jonze's kind of glorified cameo at that point.
But it was the only scene that really sold me on like, oh, like that feeling that you're supposed to get from movies. That's the only scene that I was like, okay.
That's an interesting thing is like, I would love to know more about, like this crazy system where you're cranking out
four movies at a time.
Yeah, exactly. Because you could just shoot them all at once like that. Like, that's so fascinating and interesting. But I didn't feel like I was really getting into that. It was just kind of in the background. And then
all of the jokes about when the sound era comes around are just lifted from Singing in the Rain and poorly executed. Like, they're just not as funny.
That's what I had heard. Because the one scene in the movie that I did, that I thought worked the first time when I saw it, is a scene that I guess is, you know, apparently lifted straight from Singing in the Rain, which is the first time that they're trying to record sound on set with her. She's in the college movie. That was the only scene where I was like, okay, like I remember thinking watching that scene, I was like, okay, maybe the movie's gonna take a turn now. Maybe it's gonna be better. It's gonna be.
No, I think that's when it starts to get much worse.
It does. That was like a high point and then it just plummets right after that. But I was like, yeah, like that stuff is interesting to me. So I guess I find it at least a little more interesting to watch. Once Manny becomes like a studio executive and is in power, I just was like, I have a hard time buying this, but I also, and I think it's partly the script, it's partly that Diego Calvo, I'm sure is a good actor. I don't think he has the it to lead a movie like this.
But I also think that part of it too is that like he has to act around like so many well-known people and he's like so obviously the not famous one that it's like kind of distracting.
It's a little weird. It's a little like, I'm not sure how much
I don't know why it had to be him. Like,
that's what I mean. It's like, if you're going to have that part and you want to cast a mostly unknown actor to play that part, you fucking better find somebody who is
But I don't think, I don't know why when he comes back to Hollywood, I mean, God, it's hard not to like,
I think he's good in the last scene. I think he is good in the last scene.
But I think that last scene is stupid.
Oh, we'll get to the last scene.
Yeah, like, I don't need, his otherness in the movie was like mostly fine for me until like the end where I'm just like, I don't know about this. This feels kind of gross. All the things that it really wants to nail in that last, God, 40 minutes where it's like trying to tie things up, starting with Brad Pitt, like starting with like what happens to Brad Pitt's character. They're on. I'm just like, get me out of here. Margot Robbie just walking off into the fucking mist. Give me motherfucking.
I mean, he really shows how little he gives a fuck about that character outside.
Yes, of her, he doesn't give a fuck about it. Because here's the fucking thing about women like that. The thing that happened to those starlets that age out of being starlets is so much more interesting than them just walking into a mist. Like, Veronica Lake ended up just tending bar at like a shitty bar. Lana Turner ends up getting married so many times. What happens to these women is actually like more interesting. And
just like being found dead in a hotel room.
And it's much more sad. Yeah, it's just like, it's much more sad than them just like walking into the mist. Like, the actual stories behind these people of like, well, they aged out and had to like, you know, live and then it's like, yeah, Sunset Boulevard can explain it. Like, you fucking coward. Like, why can't you?
Yeah, like, it's like, to have her death after all this time just being also, like in a newspaper. And also, it seems like she
wants to get married. I don't understand her character. It's like, she had a chance. I don't think
the character has any motivation outside of being really fucking crazy and hot. There is a scene between her and Manny when they're in New York where she's talking about ice cream. That is nonsense. It's nonsense. Like, it's supposed to be backstory for her character or to give her some sort of texture about how, like, she would have ice cream as a kid with her mom or something like that. Or I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Her dad. But the whole scene, I was just like, this is nothing. You're giving me nothing. This is like texture because you feel like you have to give this character texture in the scene, but it doesn't, it's you're giving me nothing at all.
There's so much that could have been cut for a movie that was like, I was scared that I was going to put it on and get so bored that I wouldn't be in it. Like, I was actually kind of like captivated by it, but I didn't like it at all.
Right.
It was a really weird sensation where
because
I was like,
I was a technician. So he knows how to bring you in. He can coax you into something. And then you're just like, but what am I looking at?
I know. And that's why I really want more people to see this movie that I didn't like, because like, yeah, there is like something so bizarre about it. It's like going on a date with someone that like, you know, you don't like, but like you would fuck them. Like, you're like, I don't know. Like, it's here. I don't know. And yes, like I am such a hoe for like old Hollywood shit, but something like The Artist that is like almost too precious, like really makes me turned off.
Well, it's like anytime something feels overly nostalgic in a way that feels like it's glossing over the ugliness of something,
it's like, then I can't trust it.
Yeah, which this movie does. It revels in the ugliness.
Both, which is weird.
Yeah, but I think that's. But also, again, like, I think a good director could find a balance between, and I think that's kind of what PTA does with Boogie Nights, where it's like, I have this love and affection for these people in this industry, and I understand it, and I understand why their lives are like this, and what they find in this, and how they found a family and a community. But with this movie, it was like, a good director could be like, listen, I love movies. There's a reason I make movies. I love old Hollywood. I love these old stories. I'm so nostalgic for this, but there's so much ugliness in it. And there's still so much ugliness in it. And to really strike a balance between the cynicism and the love that you have for something, that's a really hard thing to portray. It's really, really difficult. So I do on one hand commend him for at least trying. I just don't think he's the right person for it. I know for me, like, I love movies and I love to make movies and I love to talk about movies and watch them. But I also fucking hate the business part of it. I hate having to talk to certain people about the business side of things and the ugliness in it and the cynicism of it and how it does feel like we're just checking boxes for the sake of it and nobody really actually fucking cares and it's just a machine that churns out content now. Mm-hmm. That's really depressing and sad. But again, it's like, I don't know how to convey that in a movie. Like, I if I did, I would love to do it. You know what I mean? I think that that's a really hard thing to portray. And the Coens do a great job in Hail Caesar because, again, like you said, they kind of just make it a comedy and you can feel the cynicism like you always do in their movies.
Well, and they're not ever scared to like make fun of their lead leads, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Where it's like the leads are still a part of like the ridicule. And right. I think that here he really needs to like put Margot Robbie's character and Manny on like a pedestal, and it doesn't work because like they're just as complicit as everybody else. Like,
he also doesn't, like, Manny has no real flaws in a way that, like,
no, he doesn't. He has no real flaws besides he likes his cokehead.
Except, yeah, he likes her too much. again, like Boogie Nights, like Dirk Diggler has the meltdown scene where he's on coke and he's like, I'm ready to shoot right now. And he feels insecure about that. Like, mm-hmm. but you're still endeared to him. You're still on board with him. And Manny doesn't have that here. He doesn't really register. By the time you get to the Tobey Maguire sequence.
Okay, which is actually, but I also am so sick of that trope.
Again, it's the Alfred Molina Boogie Nights scene, except they replace the firecrackers with Ethan Suplee spitting. Which mm-hmm. is a weird substitute, even though I do think Ethan Suplee is good in that small part.
I mean, I kind of didn't mind Tobey Maguire here.
I don't mind Tobey Maguire in that
stuff. I think it's at least funny. It's at least alive.
Like, it is. It's something. I think it's just like the whole time I was just like, again, like, I don't think that it's just so not genuine to Chazelle to like make mm-hmm. a sequence like this.
It adds nothing.
Again, like that's the thing with Boogie Nights. Like, yeah, you could take out the Alfred Molina sequence, but at the same time, no, it works so perfectly. Mm-hmm. Like you do, it, but the movie isn't complete without it. Yeah, sure. Like you could look at it from a logistical level and be like, okay, we need to cut something. Let's cut this big set piece. The Tobey Maguire character is fun. And I do. Like Maguire's good.
He's fun.
It's honestly
the best
movies.
I've liked him in a while. Yeah. The scene where he's pitching movies. Rocks. Like,
yeah, that was good.
Like, oh, that is funny.
Yeah. No, I like that for sure. But like Diego Calva, they even give Diego Calva they try to give him the Wahlberg moment and he can't sell it. Mm-hmm. Like the part where Diego Calva realizes that the money's fake mm-hmm. and he just starts laughing, it doesn't fucking land. I don't think Diego Calva has it. But like in Boogie Nights, that's maybe one of the single best moments of Mark Wahlberg's career is in that scene with Alfred Molina when the camera's pushing in on him and he's looking off into the distance and he just looks so dazed and empty and he's just laughing at where he is in life. It's perfect. You're like, I don't know how you got that out of Mark Wahlberg. It's such a beautiful moment and it just doesn't land here at all. Also, can we talk about the broken English that Manny speaks?
Yeah. Well, because at first I thought it was like an affectation that he was doing almost to seem less formidable. Than he was. And then I realized that, no, it's not.
I feel like all the dialogue, like with him and Margot Robbie, when he's like mad at her because she owes these guys money, like every line, he's just like, cállate, Nelly, cállate.
It's Ricky Ricardo.
Yeah. It's like, what is going on here?
Yeah. No, it's not good. It's Ricky Ricardo. It's like, I like the plot line of like, we're going to clean up Nelly Leroy's like image. Like, I think that is funny. And then it goes nowhere. It's like, I just wish it would have picked what it wanted to be. I think that like this moment in American history is like really interesting because it's like our most hedonistic, godless moment in some way. And like, that's fun. And it's like when Hollywood was like a scary place, like here, it was like, actually like you didn't want your kids to move. And I like the idea of like grappling with like what it is to be a movie star for the first time. Like Nelly Leroy is supposed to represent that first class of stars. And so like, they don't know what to do with you. Like once you're not even like past your prime, but like Sing in the Rain, like, I mean, it is a comedy. It is a beautiful comedy, but it's like about that moment between Silence and Talking Pictures and how we fumbled and how the woman who plays, I guess, like what would be considered like the Nelly Leroy part, like that was largely thought to be like one of the Oscars' biggest snubs for supporting actors. But it's just like, it's a funny performance that the audience is laughing at her specifically. And I think that like Chazelle doesn't really want us to laugh at Nelly. I think he wants us to like fall in love with her because he wants that so badly. Like neither happens.
The blackface.
Snakebite? Do you want to do snakebite?
Oh, the blackface. Snakebite or blackface? Which one would you like? Pick a card. Jesus. Do you want Golden Shower, Snakebite, Blackface?
Suicide 1 or Suicide 2?
Yeah. Snakebite. Snakebite is a really dumb scene.
It is so stupid.
It's actually an incredibly elongated, stupid sequence that the longer it goes on, the more you go, why the fuck am I watching this? Yeah.
Like, why doesn't she know what shirts are? One. Like her character.
I totally forgot about this until Nick mentioned it. The whole thing of like, it seems like she loses all of her money because she lets her dad, played by Eric Roberts, who's totally solid. Always good to see Eric Roberts. I'm always happy to see him. He plays her dad, who basically opens a restaurant that's just all about her. So it seems like he pours all their money into that.
Also, I think she has a gambling problem.
Yeah, it does sound like she has a gambling problem, but also like she gives all her money to her dad to do that.
I could totally, I think that's funny.
It is, but it's kind of glossed over because I'm like, well, wait, is that how you lost the money along with the gambling? Because it sounds like you were going to let him do that. But yeah, the snake bite.
That scene is so long. Also, she just would have died, I think. And then just ends with like Brad Pitt getting hit by the car and then his like then wife screaming like,
God, poor Catherine Waterston. Yeah.
Poor Catherine Waterston. Yeah. Jesus,
give her a better
buried in this
heart.
Movie.
Jesus.
Olivia Wilde also in it for a second. I like the idea of like having a character with like a revolving door of wives. I think that is funny.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's almost like not even done for humor here though. And it's like, yeah, but it's funny.
Blackface. Now moving from Snake Eye to Blackface.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
A scene that I think could have just been fine, but then really
not so good.
So there's a scene when Manny is the head of the studio and Jovan Adepo's character, who is the jazz player who is now in films, he is asked to wear blackface because he's not dark enough, essentially.
Well, I mean, like, that is just, like, what, like, the jazz singer, they, you know, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No. I'm not saying that that's not a realistic scene. I feel like that scene could have just been...
Also, doesn't he go away after that? It's like, we're going to use this character to get us to this point so we can address it, and then we're going to dispose of this character.
Like, I feel like you could have just ended the scene with him agreeing to
letting that sink in.
But not showing it. But then he shows it, which I guess is like, yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
That's a like, kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't scene.
Yeah, that's how I felt about that scene. Like, I was like, the actor's good. Why do we never return to him? Like, why do we never see him again? And this like revolving door of characters that are constantly like bumping into each other. Like,
yeah, I mean,
why do they never bump into him again?
During the final like kind of montage where he's
that doesn't
like,
count.
Playing jazz. Yeah, but
that
like,
doesn't
it's
count.
Not.
If I'm going to talk about something I did like, I do think the scene between Brad Pitt and Jean Smart in her office was kind of fun.
Where she also, predicts the future?
Kind of. Well, no. Yes, I guess it ends corny like that. His whole storyline is that he's like the most famous actor. And once they go to talkies, people laugh at like the finale of one of his movies where he just says,
I don't
like,
buy
I love
that
you.
Scene. I don't
Me
think
either.
In the
I don't
do
buy
not
that
think an
scene.
Audience at that time is laughing.
Me either.
At that. No way.
They would have laughed if his voice was funny or something, but it's like
his voice is normal.
His voice is normal. Yeah. Also, like Nellie LaRoy sort of has like a scampy accent, I guess, but it's not that bad. It's still good. She doesn't sound bad. Like the joke in Singing in the Rain is like the actors like can't talk very well. Like they sound like shit. And so like that scene I don't buy, but I do like when Jean Smart's like, they were always going to turn on you.
My main issue with that scene is that like,
I like her in that scene.
Oh, I think she gives the worst performance in the movie. I think Jean
really?
Smart
I
is
like her
hands
in that
down
scene.
Horrible. I think she's like...
And you like her too.
I do like Jean Smart a lot. I don't know what's going on with her in this movie. I don't know what her accent is. It's horrible.
I don't know what her accent is. I like the scene in her office.
Well, I just was like, but that's the thing is like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong because you know more about this than I do, but like the idea of a preservation at that time was not really a conversation.
No.
We weren't preserving movies. They weren't like, we're going to preserve these films. Yeah. And they're going to watch you 50 years from now and you'll come
no,
back.
That
like,
is stupid.
It's an interesting sentiment in hindsight.
I
but
think
at the
what,
time,
what I like about that scene is that it's one of the only scenes where two people are just talking to each other. Where like so many, like everything else is like kaleidoscopy and there's like so much fucking things happening. It's just like a tilt-a-whirl. There's people yelling. There's like no intimacy, especially like between your two predominant leads that you're supposed to like feel something for.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, you know what? Brad Pitt just sitting down and talking to somebody. Because even though he's as famous as like the Enigma-like character that he portrays in their movie, there's something about Brad Pitt that is still miscast. And that was like one of the only scenes where I was like, okay, I like him. He kind of looks like he's at rest. I like him in the movie. He's miscast. Like,
sure.
Not his fault. Doing the best he can, but he just doesn't, he's too affable. It needs somebody with like a little more like darkness.
I guess Emma Stone was supposed to play the Nellie LaRoy part.
I don't know if that would have been good either.
She was supposed to be in that and The Menu and was replaced by Margot Robbie and Anya Taylor-Joy.
I think she dodged two bullets.
Yeah, so she could do more Yorgos Lanthimos.
I mean, that to me is like good the best career move. She definitely like looks like a silent movie actress. Like,
yeah, for sure. I can see why she would be considered, obviously.
I mean, part of me thinks that like Margot Robbie's probably a little bit better at some of like the gross stuff.
Yeah.
That party scene I hate. So to me, this is more Margot Robbie's world than it would be an Emma Stone world.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a piece written by a critic, really good critic, Robert Daniels at Slash Film, where he talked about, he really liked the movie, and he basically was saying that it's a movie about assimilation. And I'm like, yeah, I think that can, I can see the reading on that. He's also a Black critic, so I have no stake in really, you know, like objecting to that. But I think you could make a movie today about the way the people have to assimilate into a system when they're used as...
I mean, that would be more interesting.
Well, yeah, because I think it's like the way you see the way the non-white filmmakers and actors and things like that have to assimilate into the system, like we've said before, like to check boxes to make them look better, essentially. So I think that like that's interesting. And again, I'm not as educated on old Hollywood as you are. Many people are, obviously, but like I just don't know if that was...
I don't think that's in the text, but like that's fine. Like if someone was able to see that in the movie and felt good about that, that's great.
Yeah, he said in the process, Manuel cuts ties with his Mexican roots. Though they live in Los Angeles, he never visits his family. He Americanizes his name to Manny, and at a party thrown by William Randolph Hearst, he presents himself as a Spaniard. Manuel becomes intoxicated by his proximity to the white capitalistic greed that governs Hollywood and partly the American dream of upward mobility, causing him to traverse a tenuous betweenness of identity. Like,
listen, I think that's tight.
Yeah, like I think that that's there. I just don't think that Chazelle is like the guy to
write that.
To write that, or that it feels like everything is in place in the movie to be interesting. Like it's like we have an interesting setup, we have an interesting side of the studio system at that time that we're going to portray. It doesn't feel like he finished anything. It feels like he put everything in place and yeah. then didn't really finish the draft. I don't know.
It's just, like it's like he started with a feeling and then like worked backwards. And I just don't know if, especially yeah, and yeah, especially with the Margot Robbie character, I was just like really quickly fed up.
And then we should just talk about the ending really quickly before we finish up, because this is the ending.
Oh, I had heard people talk about the ending before I ever saw the ending.
I had heard, yeah, people saying like, I saw somebody could say it was like a galaxy brain ending. And I was like, okay, what is this going to be? And
then it was worse than I thought. It's like, I was expecting it to be very, very, very bad. And then it was worse. Because again, it leads with the character that even though I don't connect with anybody, I connected with possibly the least. Go for it. Hit it.
Manny returns to Los Angeles in the 50s.
And he has slightly less hair.
Slightly less hair. He has a child and a wife.
But he doesn't take them to the movies.
No. Well, they want to go do their own thing. And he says, I'm going to walk around. He walks around the studio lot. He walks by the studio lot that he worked at, which is clearly Paramount. And he walks down Melrose and then he finds himself at a theater that is showing Singin' in the Rain, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's showing Singin' again, like Nick on our bonus episode, subscribe, was like saying that like lifting a couple like shots from De Palma was annoying for him and White Noise. It's like, yeah. I don't fucking care about that. But you know what's really bad? Showing me the movie that you are referencing that is 10,000 times better than your movie.
Yeah. Like that was a common like critical consensus for the movie. Was people were like, you can't show me better movies in your shitty movie that I wish I was watching more.
Don't
than
show
movie.
Me
like,
Singin' in the Rain.
So he goes to see Singin' in the Rain. He realizes that the plot of Singin' in the Rain is basically the life that he lived. Now look,
but it's not.
It isn't. It isn't. And it's like, I think that the ending could have landed if it was just him in this theater experiencing the feeling of watching a movie again.
I think
and,
so too.
And feeling the magic of that and feeling how it affects the audience around him and the emotion that overwhelms him. And I do think Diego Calva does his best in that scene.
I was going to say, he's surprisingly good in that scene.
He gives you a lot in that scene. He really does. It kind of does remind me a lot of the ending of La La Land with Ryan Gosling.
It's the same.
But yeah, it's...
But whatever. We love to make that movie, so...
I think that works. But then he goes really crazy. And he's like, what if I show you the history of movies? What if I show you every technological
I wish there were some Pornhub in there. a girl stuck under a table.
Yeah, like the evolution to like from talking TikTok to porn. I mean, literally one of the last things you see in this movie is from Avatar, which is crazy. It's an insane thing to put in your
movie. What else is in there?
Oh, the Matrix. Anything that was like a technological, like groundbreaking.
Yeah.
It's not for a while. For a little bit, it's just because it was more about like groundbreaking storytelling and things like that. And now because we live, which is interesting because now it is in a time where it's all about the technological breakthroughs of what can be groundbreaking in a movie. So again, interesting idea.
Yeah, you're right.
Interesting idea. But... Sure. The concept is there. But it's an insane swing.
It's one of
the
craziest endings that I've seen in a movie in a really long time.
Yes.
It kind of reminded me of when I went to go see Tree of Life, a movie that I fucking hate. My date at the time had to pee in the middle of it. And then he came back and he's like, what did I miss? There was like a couple of dinosaurs fighting with each other. And he was like,
he missed the evolution?
Yeah. He missed the whole evolution.
Oh,
he's like,
man.
Fuck you. You're being a bitch. And I was like,
what
no.
did I miss?
But it's like, you can't miss that part. But also, it does sound so not true
yeah,
that you're just like, yeah, sure, I missed that. And you missed
Big Bang. You missed Malik doing the Big Bang. At that point, I was so not
tapped in.
Yeah, I had a migraine. This movie did give me a migraine. I will say, an hour and a half into the movie, I had a fucking horrible migraine. I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I think a lot of that is due to something that we did not talk about in this episode that we should. Something that I've harped on a lot is, I think the score for this movie is horrendous.
Oh, it's kind of carnival-esque?
I don't know how this score, first of all, it rips on his own score in La La Land, but also how is this the front runner for every best original score award? Like,
is it really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
People that don't even like the movie are like, but the score is great. I'm like, it literally sounds like No Speak Americano.
I think you notice score more than I do. It bothered me. I did not enjoy it. It was like not in my top five grade.
It's like silly though. It's like a goofy-ass score. It almost feels like a score that should be in The Pest at times. Like, it feels like a fucking goofy 90s like slapstick comedy score.
Yeah, it does feel like that.
I'm sorry. I feel like I'm hearing No Speak Americano play over the history of cinema right now, and I'm losing my fucking mind watching this. I was like, this is crazy. What a movie.
It's a movie. I do want to say, going back to Tommy McGuire pitching, which is like, maybe.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Did he think of the movie The Orphan?
Yeah, he did.
One of his...
What was the other one? Hold on. There was another one that was like, hold on. Oh, I will say the guy that plays the Count is actually good.
Yeah.
I like him.
I'm sure there's several people in here that are...
Him and his cape is fun.
Yeah, it was funny.
I'm sorry.
But even a movie that I think that we hated more than this movie, Don't Look Up, that's also sort of like just full of stars and stuff, we at least like found ourselves like laughing at a couple lines. Like, we at least were like, okay, but what Ron Perlman says is, you know what I mean? Like, as much as we don't like Don't Look Up, we still quote that one line fairly often.
So you're the movie producer.
Studio executive.
I got some movie ideas myself. You want to hear them?
Yes. Please.
Okay. Okay. So, there's a 10-year-old kid, and he's a prodigy at all these adult things. He's super smart with words. He can play the piano and recite Lincoln and all this stuff. Here's the twist. Turns out he's a 50-year-old midget. He only looks like he's a kid. The joke's on us. It's really good.
Wow.
It's very good.
That's great. Yeah, very good.
I am sorry.
I will say, Tobey Maguire is maybe the only actor on this podcast that has like whiplashed so quickly of being like, he was literally like, I shat on him so much a couple weeks ago. And now I'm like,
well, it's fun to see him play like a little gremlin ghoul.
Yeah.
Like, he's just,
but he's good.
And I like the touch of him applying makeup to his face the whole time. I do think that's a good touch. And I think Ethan Suplee is great as his guy. You know what? I will say, I am happy to revisit Babylon in 10 years and see how I feel about it.
Oh, I would too. Let's put that in our Google calendar. Happily
revisit Babylon, more so than The Artist.
Oh, yeah. The Artist is just like, it's hacky. Like I don't think that this is hacky. Yeah. I think that it's bad.
Yeah.
Also, like, the whole bit about like Margot Robbie like hiding like a dildo in the Samara Weaving, like, that is also lifted from something also Carol Lombard actually did that was like actually funny. Because she was like being sexually harassed by one of her on-screen love interests, but she was being sexually harassed by him off-screen. Oh, that God. She just like wore a strap-on to freak him out. I'm like that's actually funnier and grittier than what we get to see. Like, that's what I think that most of these pictures get wrong, is that like what was actually there was grosser, and so he compensates by making it like poopy farty, eat ratty.
Okay, 3-hour movie, maybe get some poop. Maybe a little poop in it. No, maybe someone eat rats. People are fucking, but like, it's not hot. There's lots of people fucking, but you're not horny. You're not horny for it. You don't like it. Yeah, I'm like, God, this is virgin cinema. Like, this feels like something I would write as a teenager if I was just like, what do people think is fucked up? This movie has a 55%. I thought maybe it could go fresh, but
no. It's going to get more rotten. And then maybe in 10 years, someone will be like, I got it.
Someone will say, you know what? He was onto something.
This is only going to get more rotten, I think.
Yeah. 52% audience score.
Did anyone get an Oscar nom for it in the cast? Yeah,
it has It has 3 Academy Award nominations for
costume. But no acting ones, right?
I think Pitt and Margot Robbie were talked about and then they just didn't land.
That is not, neither one of them, but especially Pitt. It's just like, I don't understand who this character.
No, I think it was nominated for costume design, which is some good, some questionable. Original score, which is just atrocious. And production design, which is something that I would say is, sure, fair enough. Give it production design. The money's on the screen. You know what I will say that I kept thinking watching this, I was like, you know what? Like, for as talented as a technician that Damien Chazelle can be, he has this fantastic DP working with him, Linus Sandgren, who did his last few movies. I can't think of a single shot in this movie that like is great. That I was just like, that's a beautiful shot. Right.
Well, it's moving so fast. Feels like, have you been to like a wedding recently? I have to work at a... Okay. So I don't think that Nick would do this though. I have to work at a restaurant where it was a really beautiful space. So sometimes we do weddings and oftentimes it's like 50-50. The DJ comes in and the DJ just plays the chorus of a song, like 40 seconds of a song, stops it and does the next one. It is crazy making and people love it. And it kind of feels like that where it's like giving you hit and then moving away, giving you hit and moving away.
That would drive me crazy.
No, it would. It drives me nuts. And I think that you would hate it more. Chef came out and he's like, do people do this now? Like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, that sounds
it's just insane. Like borderline, all the single ladies. It's just like, it's so wild. It's like chorus. No. And then it like blah, 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 goes out and then it's like getting jiggy with it. And it's just like fucking all on top of each other. It's awful. People don't even have attention spans for a 3.5 minute song that they like. So much so that they would rather like eat their own enjoyment of the song. Because it's crazy. But this movie does that.
Yeah, I can see that. That's a good comparison. Keith Ulick of Slant said, Chazelle's torturously glib cynicism is quite the attitude around which to build an epic boondoggle of this sort. Equally as heinous is the 11th hour optimism that he then attempts to tack onto Babylon via a jaw-droppingly wrong-headed climactic montage. Stephanie Zachrick, I think, wrote my favorite review of it. She said, Babylon isn't a film made with love or even with any degree of exactitude. It pretends to be a movie about loving movies, but more than anything else, it seeks to reflect glory on its creator. It advertises its alleged extravagance and glamour loud and hard, but only comes off looking tinny and cheap. Jason Bailey of The Playlist said, if nothing else, Babylon is a giant swing, a 3-hour plus orgy, sometimes literally, of sex, drugs, and cinema, a respected young artist reaching for a profound statement about art and commerce in America. He misses it by a country mile, but hey, he sure does take that swing. That's true. Angelica Jade Bastian wrote also a really great review of it for Vulture. Said, Babylon is a film too busy writing an elegy for the still breathing body of film as a medium to capture the true beauty and complications of being alive.
Ooh, I like that.
Okay, Austin Collins of Rolling Stone said, the disappointment is that the movie wields so much and achieves so relatively little. So I do want to talk about some people that did like it, you know? Because it does. It has a few A's. It's got some A's, man.
No, people listen, because like when I talk about it so much, I begin to like get in a fight like to myself. Where I'm like, well, at least it's not doing like the artist. I don't know.
I mean, Adam Neiman of The Ringer called it deliberately designed career killer.
No.
A nauseous, high-calorie sugar rush of a movie that not only wants to have its cake and eat it too, but also to puke it up, smear it around, and cram it in the viewer's face.
Oh, that is so good.
Michael Saul of San Francisco Chronicle said, don't mistake his movie's lack of sentimentality for callousness. Babylon is coarse, hard, and wild, but its emotion is undeniable. Babylon is what movie love really looks like. So the opposite feeling for a lot of, The Telegraph said, the film is thrillingly reckless enough to make you genuinely dread what's coming next. Vince Mancini of Uproxx said, Babylon is a movie that absolutely shouldn't work, but objectively does. 3 hours and 9 minutes that didn't bore me for a single second. Instead, it sails on the crest of a glorious wave of blood, sweat, tears, tits, shit, piss, vomit. Damien Chazelle elevates cinema by dragging it back to the gutter.
Wow. I think that's what he was going for.
I do think that's what he was going for. I'm glad.
I think that's... an industry plant.
I mean, look, if it works for some people, I'm glad. I really wanted it too. Like, I would love to go to bat for a really unhinged movie like
Me
this.
Me too. But it was never really unhinged. It's like hashtag unhinged.
MVP?
Oh. It's like I didn't, it's like it didn't occur to me
that someone was good in this.
Toby.
You want to say Toby?
You know what? I'm going to give it to Tobes because I was so mad at him after The Great Gatsby to the point that I was like, wow. I don't think you were ever good. And it was the only moment that sparked joy for me. It's like the only moment that can stay.
Sure. I think I might go Legion Lee. I really liked her a lot. It made me want to see more of her. I'll give her that. I really like you.
She's like the career I'm most interested in upon watching it. Yes. But
yeah.
I was thoroughly tickled at Tobey Maguire. I'm looking at a still of him right now. He looks like a ventriloquist dummy that's like come to life and is now dying.
Yeah, he does. He really does.
Oh, God, that was good. Oh, it was so fun to look at for that 1 second more.
Yeah, I mean, look, people do come out of this okay. Legion Lee, Tobey Maguire, Giovanni Adepo, Ethan Suplee, Rory Scovel as the Count. I liked PJ Byrne as the assistant director having a meltdown. I thought he was good. So there, you know, Eric Roberts, there are people that come out of this okay.
There are people that come out of it fine.
Final rating.
This is a meaning of a train wreck, right? Like,
yeah, it's a train wreck.
Like, it's a poopy, ratty, snake bite, pee, pukey.
Yeah, it's a lot of pee pee. Listeners of this podcast know there is only one shit movie that can ever win over my heart, and it's called Capone.
I know. So, and you know what? I still haven't found mine, baby. I'm still looking for the one.
You're still looking for your shit movie, and that's okay.
I'm still looking for the shit movie that I like.
You're going to find a
also
good shit
didn't
movie.
Like that.
All right. That's Babylon, man. We did it. We did our first new movie of the new year. We're going to be kicking off our new miniseries next week. A little 3-month so long tight. Descent into the madness of women.
I couldn't be more excited.
I'm very excited. I think we have a great little lineup here. Very diverse lineup. We got a lot of older movies, which is great. I'm happy to talk about some movies from the 70s and 60s and 80s. I mean, we rarely get to do that here. One thing has not changed throughout history. Critics don't be liking women. Yeah, we're going to be talking about a wide variety of films for our series. Gaslight.
Gatekeep
Girl Boss.
Oh, yeah. Gatekeep Girl Boss.
Yeah, you got a gatekeep and then you got a girl boss.
Okay, I forget which one.
I know. I get them confused too. Yeah, we're going to be kicking it off with a little look at Andrew Dominik's Blonde.
You're welcome, everybody.
We'll also be talking about another recent movie, a little movie you might have heard about called Don't Worry, Darling. Yeah, we'll be talking about movies from Robert Altman, Bob Rapelson, Darren Aronofsky, Robert Zemeckis, Angelina Jolie, Nicholas Refn is back, Ridley Scott is back, Spike Lee is back, little David Lynch in there. Hell, we got Griffin Dunne directing a little movie called Practical Magic. That I bet you didn't know he directed, but he did.
He sure did. Yeah, thank you for everybody, because everyone who's listening is listening on Patreon or your
torrenting, which is weird.
But if you are mooching off of your fuck buddies Patreon, like take them out for a drink or something, you know.
But we do want to give a special shout out to our top patrons. We're talking about Victoria Kruger, Andrea Ferris, talking about Royce Burke, Ben Beakey, Bork Floyd, Devin Hansen, Jean Yonarel, Constant Carino, Graham Redman, Jeff Raposch, Neil Fuller, Matthew Hayes, Britton Chance, Brody Anderson, Eric Hackman, Jade Yankowski, Madeline Dugan, Nick Laskin, and the mysterious one known as ASR. We still don't know who you are, but we love you. If I am mispronouncing your names every week, please tell me, because I'd love to not keep embarrassing myself like this. So if I'm butchering your name, I'm so sorry about that. And just let me know. Just send a little message. Say, hey, you stupid motherfucker. Why don't you fucking learn how to say my name right? And I'll say, I'm so sorry. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you want to see Babylon, it's in theaters.
It's in theaters.
It's the one movie they will not put on streaming. They said, we got to milk every fucking dollar out of this thing. It's in theaters and it's 3 hours.
It's 3 hours. So like, you're either going to go and it's really upsetting the dinner and the movie system. In Portland, it's really hard to find dinner after 9, but it's really fucking things up.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. You're going to have to go to a matinee at Babylon. Bring some Tylenol.
Enjoy.
All right. Thank you for listening.
Bye, guys.